Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Welcome back to part two of my interview with Patty Arbrister, who is an educator extraordinaire, changing how our schools eat to locally grown food that they grow in her outdoor classroom at the Hinsdale Public School in rural Montana. You won't want to miss this.
What's your least favorite activity to do in the garden?
I really don't have one.
Okay, I like that
but
too.
But if somebody forced me to spray pesticides, that would definitely be it. But we haven't had any chemicals in the garden since its beginning, and we use, I call it integrated pest management, but even when we have a pest in the garden to manage, we don't manage it with anything other than either breaking its life cycle naturally, or if it's the cabbage butterfly worms, we just pick them off the Brocchus's family. And so we do all natural, organic type when it comes to any of the pest management. In fact, with potatoes, all we do is put the potatoes in the compost, and then we add the straw and let the potatoes grow up through it, and we add more straw. And that breaks the cycle of the potato beetle, Colorado potato beetle, which is resistant to chemicals, without having to do anything but add straw to your growing bed, because they don't like to burrow down through that. They got to get into the soil to finish their life cycle, and they don't like that. So that in itself is a great tip to make better success with.
Just tell us that a little more. Into the compost pile, that's where you plant your potatoes. How big is your compost pile?
Well, we take the compost out of the compost pile and add it to what we call low tunnels. They're 4 foot by 16 foot long, and we add the compost to them. And so we're growing really potatoes in pure compost, because all we do is keep adding compost to the to those low tunnels. So they're not even growing in the soil. It's just compost on top of compost over the last 5 years.
Okay, cool. I like that idea, because that's a question a lot of people on my show have talked about, and listeners have asked questions about what to do about the potato beetles. So nice.
We've grown potatoes in the same spot for 3 years and never even seen a potato beetle. And we've got big issues with potato beetles in the region, so I know our tactic is working. Another big, big important tactic is to draw the pollinators in and to not be using chemicals in the area. And so we plant a lot of flowers and a lot of polyculture in our gardens, where the polyculture helps each other, the plants help each other.
What's polyculture? So
it's like we plant lots and lots of different plants in one bed.
Oh.
Like when I talked to junior or the Golden Triangle teachers in a workshop this summer for 2 days. In fact, Jennifer Hillhart and Aubrey Roth come to that training. And they counted like 26 plants in one 4 by 16 bed of different types of plants in one bed. That's a polyculture. And so say the nasturtiums is helping pull the flea beetles away from the cabbages, and the marigolds are, they've got a lot of chemicals in their makeup that deters other pests from wanting to go into the area they're growing in, and they harbor spiders that are good spiders, itsy bitsy little spiders that attack other bad bugs. And so we have a lot of plants helping other plants.
You know, I wanted to ask you back in the beginning, why did you have that huge bed of marigolds?
That was back in like 90, let's see, it would have been 94, 93, 94. And we were going to turn them into potpourri.
Oh.
And just picking the blooms. And so I had a contract to sell the potpourri blooms to my local plant guru seed salesman at the time. But it happened to be the year that I was pregnant. And so we did not get very many blooms harvested between my ex-husband and my ranch hand and myself. Every time I went out there, I was having morning sickness, and the guys didn't have time to be out there picking very many miracles. So it actually just turned into a beacon of planes coming over to see what in the world that was showing out there in the middle of the prairie that was so bright. It's such a calling statement. So, yeah. But they worked really pretty. We had a lot of bees.
I like that. We always grow a lot of marigolds and plant them around all of our beds. And that I know that helps with mm-hmm. the insects and bugs and things. So.
Yeah, and we grow a lot
and
of flowers.
They smell so good.
We teach floriculture in FFA. And so we've actually even had a team go all the way to the National Convention to compete in floriculture. And coming from such a tiny little school, that's quite the statement in itself. But, so we grow quite a few flowers, and I'll cut some buckets of them and take them and leave them in the shop. And anytime somebody stands around with us and do, I'll have them make a flower arrangement. And then they go gift that to somebody in the community, and the FFA kids call it growing a healthier community. And so the student learns how to do flower arranging and learns about different flowers. And they make a connection between the generations that seems to always have a gap. And so when they gift it, say, to the banker, then the banker recognizes that person, that student that's gifting that to them forever. I mean, flowers just go right to the heart, you know. And so that project in itself has been quite remarkable. And all stemming from having lots of flowers in the garden and having stuff to be able to work with to even start doing something like that.
What are some tips for creating a bouquet or what did you call it? Flower design?
Yeah. Well, we have really big vases because we grow the sunflowers to draw in the pollinators because they're big and the bees can see them from a long ways away. So I'm pretty sure we probably have the majority of all the bees in Hinsdale in our own gardens because we attract them for miles around. And so if a guy wonders where his honeybees are at in the Hinsdale region, all they have to do is come to the school gardens because that's where they're at. So anyhow, so we have a lot of them. So they're really tall, you know, and we grow branching ones. So the more we pick them, the more the kids get to have for blooms and the more pollinators for the insects. And so we start with really tall vases and usually start with a filler, like we use Borge as a filler. It's, do you know what Borge is?
Mm-hmm. Like a green leafy, kind of got thicker leaves?
Yeah, and it's an edible flower. It tastes like a cucumber.
Oh, really?
And so anyhow, it holds up all the other flowers and makes really good filler. And so we start with that, and then we stick in the tallest sunflower that we want to use. It's about the same height as the vase in the center. And then we start just being symmetrical from there and balancing it. If we put one on one side, we put another on the other side to kind of mirror it. And pretty soon the kids stand back from it, look at it, and say, well, I need some color in this spot. And then they go stick a flower in it, and pretty soon it's done.
Cool. Oh, I like that. Nobody's really talked about how to make a bouquet. Arranging flowers. That was the term mm-hmm. I was looking for. Arranging flowers. Excellent. Yeah. And what a great thing to teach kids. And I love the part about taking it to the community. I love to give flowers in the spring. I always give bouquets of daffodils. I think it's neat when they start out closed and then bloom in somebody's desk. Mm-hmm. Patty, what's your favorite activity to do in the garden?
Oh, wow. I've got so many of them that it isn't even funny. I guess I really like taking pictures in the garden.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Me too.
Especially in the morning and when we start getting into August and September when the plants are really full and lots of blooms and lots of bees. We've got tons and tons of different kinds of bees, and so we got a big educational bee project going on that's teaching the kids about the native bees. And so between the flowers and the bees, I guess they're some of my favorite outside of the picking the fruit and eating it, you know.
How about the best gardening advice you ever received?
Wow. Well, I've got a lot of people that I would consider mentors that are gardening gurus. Elliot Coleman from Four Season Farms in Maine is just unbelievable. I've read his books and watched his videos, and I've watched him on TV growing up all the way through his lifetime. He's been educating others about gardening. So I would think that he in itself, about anything that he's done, would be some great advice. Another person here in the state would be Bob Quinn's, his organic gardening mindset and visionary.
He was on episode 77.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. I can hardly wait to hear it.
Okay.
Yeah. Another one's Jeffrey Lawton. He is a permaculture guru, and I've been a geek of his, too, where I watch all of his videos and everything. And so I have been turning my lawn into an edible landscape, and so I'm using permaculture tactics to do so. And so I plan to not have a lawnmower within a couple of years, and it be an educational site to be able to convince people to stop mowing their lawn and start growing food.
Okay, I have a couple of things I got to pipe in here. And I wanted to ask you before I forget, I'm just going to ask, how big is your school garden? Like an acre, or like a quarter of a tenth of an acre?
Well, I know what an acre is. It's 43,540 square feet, but I don't know what to call the outdoor classroom. I would think it's for sure a city lot. Well, my house is on two lots, so it's for sure about four city lots.
Oh, okay.
And then the back fence in the edible schoolyard, if you go on our Facebook, the Hinsdale Outdoor Classrooms Facebook site, you'll see the edible schoolyard. And so it's got a planting that's 6 foot by about, I don't know, maybe 30 yards of pumpkins and straw bales and all kinds of stuff that they put in there and then along the back fence. So it's really hard to measure, I guess. You just have to come see it.
Okay. And we'll put some pictures.
So
in
you're invited,
show notes
along with anybody else who'd like to see it and come learn about gardening.
Okay. I can't say I get over on that side of the state very often, but you never know. I've always wanted to drive the High Line to New York when I go to see my family and go that way. So I might make it one of these
days.
Oh, yeah,
Northern Michigan, US-2. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Awesome road to tour.
How far is Bob Quinn's place? Because I'm definitely going to try to get over and see his place. Probably not till the spring, but I really want
to. Bob Quinn is... He's a little over 3 hours from me. It's
That's
I'm 2.5 hours or so from Haver, and he's just south of Haver. So.
Oh, okay. I'm going to have... I was thinking, like, ever since I read about Jennifer's blog, that it would be fun to go on a tour and go talk to people about their gardens for my podcast. Mm-hmm. So maybe next year I'm going to get to do that. And then after, like, you know, hearing these other people, the other speakers at the conference who kind of traveled around different places... Like Liz and that woman, Dr. Laura Lingneck. Anyway, so I always ask questions. Have you ever entered a fair? And you said earlier you had entered a fair. Do you want to tell us a little bit about fairs?
Oh, my gosh. I've entered fairs in most all over the place, from New York to Michigan to Oklahoma to here in Montana. But I fit at a national champion bowl in Louisville, Kentucky, in 1983. So I guess that fair by itself is the epic of my history of fairs. But the highlight lately was taking the farm to school, the Hinsdale Outdoor Classroom, to the fair at Glasgow and put it on exhibit. And so that was pretty cool.
Okay, wait, what'd you put on exhibit?
The Hinsdale Outdoor Classroom. We took in the bee boxes and planters that said grow food and all kinds of stuff that the kids had done in the outdoor classroom, because we do a lot of art in outdoor classrooms. So we had signs, and we had made a Hinsdale cafeteria banner that's a farm to school banner with the kids on the banner and stuff. And so we took all that stuff to town, along with some educational whiteboards and a bee matching game and stuff. And so we had that on exhibit at the Glasgow Fair this last August.
A bee matching game? Like bumblebee?
Yeah.
Honeybee?
The native bees. Bumblebees and the mason bees and the squash bees. And There's a whole world of bees that nobody knows about because we really only know about the honeybee rock star bee. But the kids learn all about these other bees and how important they are. Like bumblebees pollinate tomatoes, and squash bees pollinate all of the squash family. And squash bees are there inside the flowers and did the pollinating before the honeybee even wakes up and thinks about going to the flower. And when you look inside the flower, you think, there's a honeybee, but it's really a squash bee because they look so much alike.
What kind of bees pollinate sunflowers, do you know?
Sunflowers attract most bees, lots of different kinds of bees, because they have all those, every one of the seeds on a sunflower is actually a flowerette. And so they actually have hundreds of flowers on a sunflower. And so they attract all different kinds of bees. And actually pollinating flies, all kinds of stuff come to a sunflower. That's why they're so cool to have in the garden to start bringing in the whole bio life and community working together, is that they're a good mainstay to get stuff to come to one place to start making a healthy community.
What other flowers do you like to plant?
Well, for sure the borage. And borage and comfrey both are great for pollinators, but they are also both deep miners and pull all kinds of minerals up into their leaf system. And then those leaf systems we can take to the compost and then enrich our compost with those minerals, or we can chop and drop them on the ground anywhere we want those minerals. And so they're two main key players that we plant that both flower and do other really, really super beneficial stuff. We plant a lot of Calandria, marigolds, cosmos, bells of Ireland, all kinds of stuff that we could use for the flower arranging. This year we had a tough time though because most of the hail wiped out everything that was pretty fragile, which was most of our flowers, but we still had quite a few flowers.
Do you plant zinnias?
I don't plant too many. They are on the list to add to the ever-growing buy me list.
Okay. How about a favorite tool that you like to use? If you had to move someplace yet again, what tool could you not live without? Or what tool have you carried something with you all these years through all these different places? Is there something you always have to have?
Well, now that I've changed my gardening tactics to the more layer it cardboard compost straw covered upper, probably pruning shears.
Mm-hmm. I'm becoming.
They'd probably be the one because we don't use. Well, we use a potato fork quite a bit to get the potatoes out of the ground.
Right.
And if we're going to transplant tomatoes, that's all we use is a potato fork to loosen the ground, put the tomato in. So we're not tilling. We don't till anything.
I've fallen in love with the pruning shears this year, too. I find I grab for those a lot. I said when my friend Lisa interviewed me, I said the tool I couldn't live without was my wheelbarrow.
Mm-hmm.
But, yep, pruning shears, I've used those a lot this year. And I didn't even cut hardly any of my sunflowers after all. I just let them grow, and they're going to the birds. And Mike actually told me yesterday, I was like, I think the birds are eating them because I went out and was looking at the heads, and a whole bunch of the outside, like those little itty-bitty flowers that you were saying that grow on top of the seeds, there's like holes there, but there's nothing on the ground. So I'm thinking the birds, and I saw a bird go land on a sunflower twice. I couldn't get a picture of it, but while I was just standing in the garden the other day in a matter of minutes. So I think he said, I better go pick them and dry them inside or the birds are going to eat them all before I save any seeds for next year. But we've had, my big project this year was to plant 750 sunflowers. And so I did that. They all grew and they have almost all gone to seed. I was worried I planted them too late, but pretty much, yeah, a lot of them have gone to seed. So I'm going to have seeds for next year and seeds this winter for the birds. But it just seemed like every time I went out there, there were so many bees on them, I couldn't hardly bring myself to cut them. And I just like looking at them out there, and I realized I'm never going to get them to a store to sell to a florist. And I think I'm going to go with the bird seed idea. I planted a lot of different varieties. The first ones I put in the ground were these Martha Stewart organics that grew like 10, 12 feet high and have huge heads, like a foot wide. These Martha Stewart organics I got at Home Depot. And then Mike said, if you're going to plant all those sunflower seeds, why are you spending all this money on seed packets? Why don't you plant the bird seed that we buy? Because that's what we buy, a lot of that black oil sunflower seed. And so I planted 350 of just those. And those, I think, were some of the best. They had the prettiest blooms. They had small flowers that would look good in bouquets. They've all pretty much gone to seed. Those are the ones that I'm talking about that the birds are on. Although some of these ones right by outside my window that ended up having like five blooms on a stem are the ones I actually saw the birds on eating. The chickadees were down there pulling the seeds out. I planted just a total variety. I bought a bunch of burpee, different seeds, and so just, I don't know, lots of different ones. But the bird seed ones worked good. And the Martha Stewart sunflowers bloomed the biggest by far. So, okay, we're over an hour, so I'm going to keep going a little bit quicker. Got any techniques for cooking, a recipe, harvesting, just anything about eating vegetables? Kind of going to whip those four questions into one.
Yeah, well, I'm doing a psychological game to get the kids to eat. You know, because not all the kids are in the garden every day, obviously. And so they, it's always a game to get them to recognize that they should eat it. So we're part of Aubrey Ross Harvest of the Month pilot. And so I'll use the lentil example, I guess. We grow lentils in the area, and none of our people in this community eat lentils. And so I thought, wow, we need to change this culture, you know. And so I the kids know that I'm in it for them, and they know I've got their back. And so I can ask them to do most anything, and they probably will do it. But so, and the lentils, I asked the 7th and 8th graders to set at the tables all around the cafeteria, so then they would be student leaders with their computers. And then the little kids, the K through 4 kids, come in the cafeteria, and I just told them to go find an older student they wanted to set with, and so they all did. And so then I asked them, I says, have you guys ever heard of lentils? And the younger kids were just like, no. And so I says, well, the kids, I says, okay. I says, you guys, who grows lentils here? And so two of the kids raised their hands and said, my family grows lentils. Well, of course, they were the sports kids. And the little kids look at them like they're just the greatest beings on earth, and they're like, oh, John grows lentils. And I'm like, yeah, and lentils are like one of the richest, best protein food sources we can eat in the world, and people eat them all over the world. But do you guys eat them in Hinsdale? And they look at me like, no, we don't eat them here. I said, we should try to eat them here. So here they are. We've made them into a little bit of hummus, and we're going to put them on a cracker. So let's all take a bite of them, and let's see what we think. And so they did. They ate them, and then they fill out a little survey monkey, and which is like 3 or 4 questions.
Oh, how cool. And the older kids are sitting there?
Yeah, the older kids are only helping them go from one survey to the next survey, so it goes fast on the computers. And the kids, little kids, fill out the survey. And so it was like 73% of the kids said that they liked lentils. And it was like 95% said they'd never even heard of lentils before. And it was really high, like 65 or 70% said that, yeah, they'd eat lentils if they were on the salad bar once in a while.
You are amazing. Way to go, Patty. That's just excellent. And what a way to, you know, involve technology and science and food, which any kid in school, any teacher, any parent will tell you that as soon as you incorporate food into a project, you're going to, you know, excel. But getting kids to eat lentils probably, or even hummus, saying that might even be a challenge. So cool. I like that. Do you have the recipe for the hummus? Was like a hard rice? Is it easy, or like what? I didn't even know. I was thought hummus was made out of chickpeas. You made it out of lentils.
Yeah, you can make it out of lentils too. You can make it out of several products. And I use my cooks, just Google it. To find a recipe that will work fast and easy for them.
Okay.
So,
how about a favorite internet resource?
Oh my gosh! You know what? I am a research guru, And so I put myself through online college and have a business degree now while I've been teaching school and earning an FFA. And so I'm just a research fanatic. And so as far as favorite websites, well, TED Talks is my favorite of all, and usually in a food or organic scene. But Elliot Coleman's is pretty stellar, and so is Jeffrey Lawton's website.
Okay. I'll put the links to all those. And so it's funny that you said the TED Talks, because the girl I interviewed this morning, whose show is probably going to air tomorrow on Monday, talked about she's outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and she said that they have this new thing called the biophilia talks coming out of, I think it was the Phipps Conservatory, and they are kind of like a TED Talk, but for growing food. So I'll send you the link.
Wow.
And it'll be in the thing tomorrow, so you might be interested in
those. I would
love
to get on the docket.
Yeah. How about a favorite reading material or book? I know you mentioned some above, but did you have a different one? You had said there was...
Well, there is a guy that I think everybody should start learning from. That his name's Frederick Kirschenman. It's K-I-R-S-C-H-E-N-M-A-N-N. And he's originally from North Dakota, and he is an organic farmer, but now he is with the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture, and he actually works out of Iowa State University. And I started studying him about 6 years ago, and he was talking about polycultures and biodiversity of soils and making this plant community and having everything work together. And he's mostly on the videos more than, I suppose he's got books, but I usually don't have time to read that many books, so I usually do my research through the internet. But he is well worth checking out and studying. That he's got this whole thing figured out as far as what agriculture has got to do to become resilient and to move beyond the kind of feel good of just organic and the thinking of sustainable. This guy's way out there, and he's very, very knowledgeable.
Okay, excellent. Nobody's recommended him, so we'll like that. I'll have to check him out, and I'll put the links in the show notes. Okay,
cool.
Now, I don't know if you necessarily have a business, but you're an educator. Like, do you have some advice for listeners on how to get started in changing their schools? Is that what you would want to talk about, or you have a business degree?
You
might want to talk about something else.
We could talk every day probably for a week or so and not get too bored with you and I. But then, I guess my latest passion is to try to get people to realize, every person, to realize that there's something more they could do to better the future. And so I'm into the butterfly effect and small actions making big impacts. And so my latest... visionary is to get every person to realize that they can either become a big part of the solution or they are the problem. And so that's right now the cutting edge of what I try to get people to think. Yes. So if we could just think about little things like stop drinking anything with high fructose corn syrup in it, that would make a big impact in the world, because then the need for all of that genetically modified corn would be reduced, because how we spend our dollars, how we vote for whatever the practice was to produce the product we purchased. And so if I could just get people to think, that would be awesome.
I think
because I think we do need to leave a better place for the children than what we're presenting today.
You're connecting the dots there, that drinking a soda has as much to do with your own health as it does to our planet, and the connection to the high fructose corn syrup that a lot of people probably don't realize that connection.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then, well, my final question is usually, if there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? But is that kind of what you want to have for that answer? Or did you have a different answer?
Let me think about that for a second. Because if we really could get people to think and them to recognize that they are the problem, because I think the majority of the people are ignoring that there is problems, or they recognize there's problems, but they're ignoring doing anything about it. So they just kind of stick their heads in the sand, which is unfortunately the majority, where we've got to get enough people thinking that I can be part of the solution and I'm going to do something, even if it's just that small, deciding to stop drinking the soda. That's going to make major impacts. We start getting several of us thinking that way, we're going to change the world. Because we only got to get to the tipping point, because the majority of the people don't do anything. So a small percentage of people will actually move to action, and we get those people thinking in the right direction, we're going to get things to be a better place.
You are so right on, Patty. And I think that's why you have made such a huge impact in your community, but it's spreading throughout our state and our nation as you teach other people and you're making a difference with those kids are going to go on and learn and change things, and people who hear you speak as you grow. And as I said in my email, I hope you eventually think about, you know, going into Congress or becoming our superintendent of schools someday or something where you're having a bigger impact, because I mean, you've learned so much and you have a natural passion for teaching, and you're just really good at it, the way you speak and explain things and take action. But that is so important to show people that, you know, if we all make a little change in our own lives, it will really add up. And you've, you know, definitely made little changes in your lives that have added up and made huge differences in lots of people's lives.
Yeah. And I think one takeaway, if I really need to get people to think harder, I usually stab them in the heart with a type of either statement like, think about your grandkids 100 years from now. Mm-hmm. And what are they going to write in a letter to you? Did you do anything? And you knew things weren't going well. So I just want people to do something. Be the solution.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for sharing with us today. You've made such a big impact.
You are more than welcome.
And I hope listeners will take some action, get out there and do something. So do you have an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden?
Yeah, just do it. Don't listen to a single naysayer. I've never, ever listened to naysayers. I hear them. And I use that for fuel to make myself go to the limit. I don't take no for an answer and just go for it. And you can grow lots of food without any chemicals. And I will get around people, because I'm working with the National FFA a lot with their farm to school movement and their hunger mission to stop hunger in America. And I just really, really believe that we can do something.
And you are living proof that we can do something. It's not just a belief. Mm-hmm. Like, you've shown us all that you've made these changes by just speaking up and making people implement the things that there's already rules in their community, that they have to have a wellness committee in their schools. And now you've got healthy food in your own school, and you're changing other schools and promoting local farmers that are growing that meat. And so super kudos to you, Patty. You're awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
You're welcome. And, you know, I always leave people with, because people are always eager to hear more from me when I wrap up with a session or a presentation or workshop. And so they'll say something like, well, we can't possibly grow enough food with organic practices to feed the population. And I just leave them with something to think about, that they don't have to worry about the food. They're going to have to worry about the water, because we're going to run out of water way before we ever run out of food. And I truly believe growing food in a sustainable way and taking care of the soil is going to conserve the water. and produce a better food product, and we're going to need less of that food product because the nutrition is going to be much higher in that food that's coming out of rich, organic soils than what's coming out of production ag at the moment.
Yeah, so
true. Usually leaves them jaw-dropped because I just really want them to think, you know. And it's so true. We got to take care of the water. So I leave people with what's important to a human, and I think it's food, water, shelter, and clean air.
Mm-hmm. And you're teaching people how to have all of those here in the United States and everywhere, and it's important. So important. And I love the way that you've talked about so many easy action steps we can take today, just from even putting some, you know, herbs in your garden, some borage or some, what was the other one that you said?
Comfrey.
Comfrey, yeah. Borage and comfrey in your garden for the bees, or just growing something, trying something. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Do you want to tell listeners
You're welcome, Jackie.
How to connect with you? Should they go to your Facebook page, or if
they
wanted to reach out?
They can go to the Hinsdale Outdoor Classroom Facebook site or the Hinsdale FFA Chapter Facebook site, and they can see what we're doing. And we have left albums on there for the Root Cellar Project is on the FFA site that you could actually walk all the way through the process and actually figure out how to do it on your own. And then the Passive Solar Construction is on the Hinsdale Outdoor Classroom site.
Okay, cool.
And I guess I'm supposed to be the keynote speaker for the Growing Youth Summit that's coming up in Livingston and Rocky Boy. And so hopefully we can get some kids to come to that and some adults to bring the kids to that.
When does that take place?
They have one coming up in Billings, I think, here. But the Growing, it's a farm-to-school leadership put on by NANCAT. And Billings is October 5th, which is tomorrow.
No.
And then Livingston's October 11th, which I'm speaking at. And Rocky Boys is on October 24th. And then they wrap up in Kalispell on October 26th. And they are teaching kids how to grow local food and to start developing farm-to-school in their communities.
Ooh, I'm going to have to look into that. Great. See if I can go to the Kalispell one for sure.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Maybe I can take one of my grandkids along.
Yeah, that'd be great.
For their class.
But other than that, down the road, eventually I may become consulting and still teach school because we're on a 4-day school week. And so I love helping other people. And so I would think that someday I'll move in that direction. But right now you'll have to get through to me through the Hinsdale school sites.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing with us today. And I'll send you the
You're
link
welcome.
When it goes on the air.
Yeah, and I can hardly wait to see you at the Hinsdale Outdoor Classroom in person next summer when you're on your tour. That'd be fantastic.
Okay. You got it. Thanks, Patty.
Okay. You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to check out our website, organicgardenerpodcast.com. That's just organicgardenerpodcast.com. And you'll see the links to everything that we've talked about today in the show notes page and all the other episodes there. You can easily search for people by name. You can download our ebook on organic gardening basics and subscribe to our newsletter for updates and just different things that are going on. Thanks for listening, and remember to grow local.